And welcome to Pet Theories. I'm Eve, your local dog walker, and with me, as always, is Ephraim, your local dog petter.
What?
You pet dogs?
Not like without asking. You make it
locally. I don't walk dogs without.
Well, asking. I mean, I don't pet dogs all over the country. I don't do it nationally.
That's why I said local.
Dog.
All the words made sense.
Local dog petter does not sound savory.
No, it doesn't.
Today we're going to bring you a doggy health question and an inheritance question, as well as some news. Oh, wait, it's your turn.
Oh, right. It's time for news for dogs.
All right, what's our first story, Eve?
So our first story comes from Chile about how a group of border collies is helping to restore and reseed the forests in the El Mal region of central Chile, which had a large series of forest fires.
Yeah, South America in general had a ton of really bad forest fires this year.
Yeah, that apparently charred over a total of 457,000 hectares.
So 500,000 hectares? Hectares?
Hectares?
How many acres is that? Can we just... Okay, I'm going to just look this up. 2.471 acres.
So
like 1.1 million acres.
Okay.
So 1,129,271 acres, which is a lot. So if you've ever seen 1 acre, just imagine 1 million of those.
Yeah. So a very large area of this forest.
Yeah,
the El Maule.
You probably pronounce the E at the end, right?
Yeah, it's Spanish. It's not Polynesian.
Maule.
Yeah, so they have these series of forest fires last year that burned over 1 million acres of forest. But starting this spring, after the wet winter in the southern hemisphere, there's been a pack of 3 lady collies running around in the forest.
Das, Olivia, and Summer.
And they've been reseeding the forest.
Yeah, I guess so. They've got little, like, side, like, those, what are they called when you put them on a horse?
Saddles. There's satchels.
Satchels. But not satchels. There's a word for them, like, side saddle. Not side saddles.
No, on a
motorcycle, too.
Saddlebags.
Saddlebags, yeah. So they're like saddlebags, and I guess they're perforated.
Yeah, and so they're full of seeds.
Yeah, grass seed and, you know, like, wildflowers and things. Yeah.
So their owner, Francesca Torres, lets them run around the charred remains of the forest, just scampering away with these bags full of seed on them. And so they just scatter them all about.
Yeah, they cover about 30 kilometers a day.
Right.
Yeah, I guess all of them together is a pack, right? I imagine they don't break out into 3. They probably go into the pack together all around.
Well, I mean, they are border collies, so they're definitely dogs that work, you know, independently, each as the head of a different group.
Yeah, but it seems like it would make more sense to just have them out in like an arrow formation so you can spread like a big wide path of seed together.
That's probably exactly what they're doing.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
Because you can cover more ground the way I think of it as like having a wide brush.
Right.
All this is just a guess.
Yeah.
And yeah, they can sow 10 kilos of seeds a day.
Which is a ton of seed. Well, not a ton, 10 kilos worth. But yeah, it's a lot of seed.
That's 10 times as far as a human could cover in a day.
Sure.
For obvious reasons, because they're not even carrying. They're just, like, running around, you know? Boop-a-doop-a-doop-a-doop.
Right. Well, it's the way that they're spreading it, which is the most important thing, is that, you know... So the reason why they, besides from just general replanting, they want to bring some of the animals back to the forest, and the animals aren't going to come back if there's no vegetation there for them to eat.
Or hide in.
So they
can eat each other.
Right.
Well, no, because it's like fox... It's, what is it? It's foxes, hares, and lizards are the big 3 animals.
Right.
So, you know, those foxes, hares, and lizards, I'm sure, are eating each other.
I don't think the hares are eating the foxes or the lizards.
Are you kidding me, Eve? Bloodthirsty. Have you never read Benicula?
No.
Oh, you should well, you wouldn't appreciate it now, because you're not six.
But you don't know that.
That's true. Well, it's in our house. It's probably up in the attic. Go find Benicula.
You know that I'm not 6, but the listener does not know that I'm not 6. I could be a genius 6-year-old, and now you've ruined it.
So wait, you're telling me that a 34-year-old who's drunk half the time is the same as a genius 6-year-old?
33.
Oh, sorry. Where were we?
So I was talking about spreading seeds, and then you got confused.
I'm sorry, I got into the animal. I want to talk about the animals.
So,
seeds. This isn't called plant theories. Although we should do a show called Plant Theories.
But they're finding that this is working actually very well. That, you know, even though they've only been working since March, that already seedlings and mushrooms and other grasses are starting to reappear in the areas that they've already covered.
Yeah, seedlings and even little vines coming up. That's great to hear. Well, I mean, you've seen our backyard.
Yes.
If we hadn't mowed it by now, it would be like the Great Plains. Mm-hmm. It would be like a little tiny chunk of the Great Plains in Jersey City.
But this we would be talking about if we had, like, burned it to the ground first.
It was completely barren in the winter.
It's a little different than a forest fire.
Well, only because all the trees are gone. But I'm saying just, like, if you had planted our garden full of grass and seed, and, I'm sorry, and vines, and, you know, mushroom spores and such things, and wildflowers, then by now it would be a jungle of such things.
Oh, sure.
Yeah, especially if we were, you know, in Chile. Also, you know, I have to say, all of the ash in the forest fire probably is really full of nutrients and nitrogen, so I bet you that helps plants grow back quickly, even if, you know, you can't grow back a tree quickly, obviously.
Right. I don't know. It might be very upsetting for the pH of the soil.
It's true.
Lime.
Well, the work's been underway for in 15 different forests in the area.
Yeah.
In a lot of them, or rather, in some of them, the grass is back. I'm sure some of it is just gone. It's blitzed.
Not necessarily, but so the dogs, you know.
I'm just saying that the article specifically says some, not like many or much or most.
Right.
Which hurt when I read it. But, you know, it is certainly 10 times more than had it just been people trying to do it.
Yep. So the dogs, Das, Olivia, and Summer, there's nothing special about the dogs. They're not trained for this in any sort of way.
Well, the woman's a dog trainer.
Right. Well, what I mean is that these aren't, you know, we talk a lot about specialized working dogs, whereas these are just a group of dogs running around in any which way.
Well, they're sheepdogs, so they're really good at you going like left and they go left, right?
Right.
Yeah. It's like, right? Isn't that the whole thing of sheepdogs? Is that like you can like, you know, do two blows on the whistle and they all go right?
Yeah, yeah.
So that would be, it's perfect for like planting forests because you can be like, you know, okay, left, oh, they're the other way.
Right, right.
Yeah, and fast too, right? Like corgis are fast when they move. They got little legs, but they can really move.
Right, which is a good thing. These are border collies.
I'm sorry, border collies. Border collies are fast when they move, right?
Yeah, yeah.
They still have little legs. It still works.
No, they're tall.
Are they border collies? I think of them as being shorter than other collies. They're not as big as, like, was Lassie a border collie?
Yep.
Oh, okay, never mind.
Yep.
Is there a smaller kind of collie?
No.
Really? I think there's, like, a small yappy collie. Is that just a corgi?
That's a Shetland.
It's a Shetland.
A collie at all.
Okay.
They look very similar, but they are not collies. They are not miniature collies.
No. Oh, no?
Nope.
Okay.
They're not toy collies. The Shetland,
Because they both have the same head, right?
They look exactly the same.
Okay, yeah, okay, cool. Then that's what I thought.
But they're not, is my point.
Okay.
Well, like poodles, right? The tiny poodles are the same as
just bred smaller.
Poodles, just bred smaller.
But Shetlands are a totally different
breed. Totally different breed.
Okay, so I thought that there was a collie and there was a border collie, which was like a smaller collie that like maybe lived on the border of some country in Ireland or something.
Collie, but they're all the same size.
Yeah, I guess that's true.
Yeah.
Well, the funny thing is as iconic as a dog as it is, I only knew like one ever, so I never really got a good sense of how big they are in reality.
Well, they're, you know, very tricky dogs for people who don't run farms to have.
Because they're full of energy and need instruction?
They need jobs.
Yeah.
Like actual jobs, like 9 to 5. Clocking in, taking half an hour lunch break, you know, jobs.
So our next story is a weird one because the Black Plague is still alive and well in the western United States, specifically in the Rocky Mountains and the High Plains, because
prairie dogs can get the plague.
Well, any mammal really can get the plague, right? You get it from fleas.
Right.
The reason you get it from rats is not because the rat bites you or anything or because it has bad vapors, which is what they thought in the 14th century, because they were dum-dums. without science.
Uh-huh.
They were scienceless dum-dums.
Mm-hmm.
No, it's the flea, European flea, I think, which carries the Yersinia pestis bacteria in it, which is a horrible bacteria that wiped out like a third of Europe in the 14th century. But so this flea will live on any mammal, which is why they also bite us.
Right.
So that is, means that in Europe in the 14th century and in Asia after that, and then in North America in like 1900, there was an outbreak that came out of California. These fleas really are attracted to any mammals, which means that prairie dogs, which are all over the Rocky Mountains and the plains, get it very easily.
A bunch of prairie dogs get it every year. It's definitely a big problem that prairie dogs have.
Yeah, it really severely cuts down their numbers. I mean, it's pretty deadly if you get it. You're dead in like 10 days. It's very rare that you survive it.
Well, unless you have access to penicillin.
Oh, well, that's what I mean. Yeah, yeah. So it can, or doxycycline now would be used. It's,
right,
but yeah, it's a bacteria, which means that you can knock it out now. You know, no one dies of the plague now because we have antibiotics.
For now.
For now. So what they're trying to do is vaccinate these prairie dogs.
An edible bait vaccine for prairie dogs.
Yeah, it's basically just like a peanut butter square.
Yeah.
With some vaccine in it. And yeah, it seems pretty effective. That seems like if you get the vaccine, because they also gave out, you know, which is adorable. I love scientists. They gave out just peanut butter treats.
Oh, as
anyway,
a placebo?
As a placebo. Yeah, there was a placebo
well, you gotta
population.
Have a
you do have to have a control. But I still think it's funny that, you know, like it would have been great if they found that although the drug works, you could also just give the prairie dogs peanut butter and this whole time.
It turns out all this time peanut butter could take down the plague.
And I don't even think it's real peanut. It's like peanut butter flavoring.
Probably. Why waste the good stuff on the prairie dogs?
But still, vaccinated colonies, or dogs and prairie dogs in vaccinated colonies, were twice as likely to survive as the control. So
right.
There you go.
And another great thing is previously the way that they would manage this problem is that they would spray insecticides on the burrows of the prairie dogs.
Which is not good.
Right, because you're just spreading insecticide all over the plains and the homes of these prairie dogs. So now...
Yeah, so they're using pesticide, which, you know, is fine, although it's bad for the crops and the water and our water supply.
And all the lizards.
And lizards. But also, you're just going to breed...
super fleas.
Super fleas. Or just fleas that are resistant to pesticide. And let's not do that, people.
It's the super flea, the cousin of Superfly.
No. Super flea is flea with a cape.
Yeah, Superfly's cousin.
Would he be wearing a shirt? No, just a
no
shirt and a cape. Yeah. That's good because Superfly needs a bassist at all times anyway.
Yep.
There you go. I feel bad for the prairie dogs. First you get the buboes, which basically is what the lymph node closest to wherever you got bit swells up and then maybe bursts.
Ooh.
Yeah, and then you can get gangrene. You can get gangrene in your fingers and nose anyway.
Sure.
Then you get the chills. Then you get the malaise. Then you get sick. And 10 days later you die.
Yeah. Say.
Which is why, if you live west of the Mississippi, don't touch dead animals. Like, don't touch dead animals no matter where you live. But if you live west of the Mississippi and you see a dead mammal, do not touch it.
Especially a prairie dog.
And, especially, well,
also,
or any rodent or mammal. Like, it really fleas are not discriminating.
Yeah, but also don't touch live prairie dogs either.
Yeah, they got those scary fangs.
No, I meant...
They never stop growing.
What?
Prairie dogs, the rodents, right? So their teeth never stop growing.
Right. I thought you meant that the prairie dogs themselves never stopped growing.
They
do.
No, they're like goldfish.
There's not 30-foot prairie dogs as far as I could tell.
No, I thought, I'm pretty sure prairie
dogs... Breaking news, 30-foot tall prairie dogs.
They're like goldfish. However big you put a container you put a prairie dog into, that is as big as they grow.
The Great Plains are quite a container.
I mean, I'm just imagining like... buffalo-sized herds of prairie dogs loping across the plains.
As far as the ear could hear.
Yeah.
But so, a thing that I actually love, this little detail in this New York Times article about the vaccine for the plague, is that the real reason why they want to save these prairie dogs is not because of they want to get rid of the plague.
Uh-huh.
Which is always a good, you know, side effect, not having the plague around.
Yeah.
But
yeah,
really, yeah. It's working to conserve the endangered black-footed ferret who lives on the plains.
Okay, do the ferrets eat the prairie dogs?
Yes.
No. Yeah. What? No. Yeah. No. So no, the, Eve, no.
Prairie dogs are considered vital to prairie
Eve, I got
survival.
So emotionally invested in these prairie dogs. Don't even finish that sentence. How dare you? You didn't tell me this when you came up with this story.
First off, I didn't come up with the
story.
When
you brought me the story?
Well, I'm sorry, you didn't read to the end.
Well, I was too busy thinking about the plague.
Yeah. Prairie dogs are considered vital to ferret survival because they are its favorite prey.
I hate ferrets. Sorry, ferret listeners.
But that's why they developed the vaccine.
Yeah, although they're using it in other populations too. Like for foxes in America and Europe, they have like meat-flavored vaccine cubes that they're
testing
out.
Right, well, those are for rabies, not for plague.
Oh, right, right, right.
But yes. Yeah, but yeah. Yeah, the you know, local wildlife federations have, in various countries, have tried various vaccine baits like this for rabies and other things.
And swine flu for wild boar.
Mm-hmm.
And Lyme disease, which we talked about previously. Mm-hmm. Like just trying to inoculate the...
The mices.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Although, man, that would be impossible. How would you do that?
I don't know.
I mean, it just seems like that's like... The smaller the animal, the more of them there are, generally, right?
True.
I mean, just as like a, you know, not as a scientific rule, but just like when you think about it, right? Like, there are far more mice than there are prairie dogs.
Well, that's because of the plague.
Oh, you're right.
So, in very important news for dogs... I know we've strayed a little off that real mission.
I mean,
but
we always called it news for dogs because it sounded better than news for pets. It's really just news for pets, and I guess prairie dogs aren't pets. Whatever.
Wait, but I mean, like
ferrets are. There you go.
It's news for our animal listeners. News that you can use animals. This is very important news for dogs.
It is. Well, it's not. It's local news for dogs.
Well, yes.
It's genuine local news for dogs.
Yes.
Now, this comes from ABC 27 News.
In New Cumberland, PA, the council is debating whether or not to allow dogs in parks.
Like they're just their public parks?
Yes.
Okay.
Because apparently dogs are not allowed in any of the parks in New Cumberland, Pennsylvania.
They don't have dog runs?
Nope.
Okay. So there's like an advocacy group that's advocating for allowing dogs in all the parks or in some of the parks?
Yeah, so the Humans for a Dog-Friendly New Cumberland is a group that is working to overturn the ordinance banning dogs in the parks. And they addressed the council last month about the concerns that the council had about allowing dogs in the park.
Well, some of which I have to say I am partial to.
Right, mainly about, you know, safety, poop, and cost.
Council President Jack Murray, who clearly was not very happy about this idea, does not want dogs in his park. He came up with a bunch of reasons, right, as to why, and he said he was mostly concerned about safety, which is a BS argument, because it's not like a leashless law. It's not just saying you can just run your dogs all around the park, because obviously. So that pretty much takes away the safety concern, right?
Right.
So there's that. So he says, you know, he's concerned about dogs interrupting baseball and softball games. This is Murray. C, concern number one.
Right.
Biting a child. C, number one. Or certain breeds provoking fear in people who currently enjoy the parks without the presence of the animals. To which I say, who cares? I'm serious. Certain breeds. We know what you mean.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So get out of here with that.
Right.
The one thing I would be concerned about is just poop. I just don't want to play baseball or like run around and have fun with my niece or whatever in a field covered in poop, which is why I think there should be...
Oh, don't you think you're so special? Poop. Ooh, so fancy. I'm not one to run around in poop.
So I understand that.
Well, so this group is also saying that they've already raised the money to put in dog waste stations.
Not good enough for me.
Well, so...
People don't care. They're jerks. I have a better solution for this.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah. Which is you have part of the park you allow dogs and part of the park you don't. Not even a dog run. Just say, like, no dogs in this area. Boom, you're done. Everyone who's afraid of dogs or wants to play baseball and not have to worry about running, you know, walking in some poop, not getting attacked by a dog or having it interrupt your game because that's stupid, but just walking in poop, then fine. Like, you go to the non-dog park. Done. Especially if it's every park in town.
Well, given that this measure has been tabled, then you should write in and let them know with your suggestions, because apparently the council members were split on support of the ordinance. They wanted to spend more time looking into it and researching it, so you could help out. You could consult.
I'll drive down to New Cumberland and say...
Consult on this issue.
Yeah, I'll say, all of your concerns are stupid except for the poop part, which sympathetic to.
But they've raised the money to put waste stations in, and apparently it would only cost about $110 each park.
Yeah, which is not a lot in a park and rec budget, right?
Especially since this wouldn't be coming from taxpayers.
Oh, yeah, they said they would pay for it. They fundraised for it.
Yeah, though I do appreciate that Council President Jack Murray did want to know why dog owners couldn't carry their own bags them damn selves. And I want to say that's a good question.
That is a good question, but people are jerks.
Well, I would say, personally, as somebody who, picks up a lot of poop every mm-hmm. day, that mm-hmm. Sometimes I get to my last or my second to last walk, and I find that I've run out of bags because it's the end of the day, and I've just gone through them all.
That means you don't have a backup roll somewhere in your purse.
Well, I typically do, but sometimes you run through that backup roll. But there are several parks that do have these waste stations, and they
actually have them?
Yeah.
Oh, really? Because they used to not have any bags in them.
No, but, and then there are a couple developments that have them in mm-hmm. front of their buildings and whatnot. Yeah, and so they're very helpful and handy to have around.
Mm-hmm.
Plus, it's helpful if somebody does, not pick up after the dog. You can just say, there's
one right there.
Right over there.
Yep. So, hey, jerk.
Well, you can pretend to be more polite about it.
But... Oh, yeah, we answered this question of our listener. Mm-hmm. Yeah, just go like, hey, there's the bag.
Yep.
Other thing I love about this write-up is that the word millennials was put in scare quotes.
Yep, I saw that too.
Yeah. Like, I hate that word. It's dumb. But...
You just say that because you're not one. You're too old.
Yeah, fine. I'd hate it even more if I was one, I think.
Yeah, well,
millennials.
We do.
Oh, yeah, you're a millennial, aren't you?
Technically, I am the oldest of the millennials.
You really don't remember life before the internet?
I do.
That's what I consider the actual break. It's not a date. It's whether or not you remember life before the internet. And, like, typewriters and stuff.
Of course.
Yeah,
but
so
I'm
not really a millennial.
Well, I'm technically the oldest of the millennials as far as the group is considered.
No, you know who Jarvis Cocker is. You're not a millennial.
The internet exists. Everybody knows who Jarvis Cocker is. He's got a show on the BBC.
Eve.
And a beard.
Eve. So in a tool using Crow update, Eve, you were tweeting a bit a couple weeks ago about a evidence-stealing crow in, where is it? In Canada?
Vancouver. Yeah.
I was looking at the story. Eve, tweeted about it. But I think the story behind the story, you buried the lead a bit.
I don't know. I think the most important part was that when we talk about crows using tools, we did not mean use them to attack male people with. But
police officers, apparently.
Yeah.
It stole evidence out of a car, I guess. A cop car. Anyway, that picture of it with a knife is wonderful.
Yeah.
But I think the bigger story is that you can go online, and if you're in front of your computer or your phone, you probably are. Just type in http://, of course. You guys knew that part. giscourses.net, giscourses, giscourses.net/crowtracks, crowtrax, crowtracks, crowtrax.html. And that will give you an annotated map of every crow attack in Vancouver. And when you turn that heat map on, you realize that downtown is a bloodbath of crow attacks.
Yeah, it seems pretty dangerous. Though, I would say any bird flying around with the knife in its mouth is probably pretty dangerous.
You realize it's more than just that one crow, right?
It's not. That's the thing that's so crazy about that story is that they have that crow banded. And that crow is, like, infamous for, A, stealing the evidence and attacking the mailman with the knife and stealing nails from, like, the horse track, from, like, the horseshoes.
Horse nails?
Yeah. And all sorts of other shiny, pointy things and, like, attacking people.
But it's other crows as well.
Yes. But there is one specific banded crow that's been banded separately with a bright red band from all the other crows, so that way people can see it coming and go, oh no, it's that one.
So yeah, if you're in front of your computer, go to that. We'll link it. Or just go to our website, pettheoriespodcast.com. It will be the first post because it'll be in the episode notes for this story. Seriously, it's terrifying. It's like Alfred Hitchcock's The Birds, The Game.
And remember, folks, they remember faces.
That's good to remind people. Although you do wonder how many of those self-reported attacks are just people pretending like they got attacked by crows, because you know at least there are a bunch of those. This one comes to us through our site, pettheoriespodcast.com, where you can submit a question right there on I think the first page is now the episodes. Hit ask. It says ask. That stands for ask a question. Eve staring at me with hate in her eyes.
I'm just waiting for you to read the question.
Hold on. You can also contact us through our Gmail, pettheoriespodcast@gmail.com. You can Skype us. You can go to our page on Facebook. If you hit contact, that sends you right to our form. Or you can just like yell at us on Facebook, however you do that. I have no idea how Facebook works. I hate it. You can yell them to us at Twitter, on Twitter. This one comes to us from Mr. Jonathan Ritchie, and he says, If your pet's nose is dry, does that mean he is sick?
Okay, so once again, not a doctor.
Yeah, we are not doctors. This is not legal advice. Obviously, if you think your pet is sick, take him to a vet.
Right, not a doctor, but it depends. You know, I would say if your dog all of a sudden is getting a dry nose, then that's definitely something that you probably want to look into. But if your dog always has just a bit more of a dried nose, then it's probably fine. Though you want to be on alert for your dog getting like a chapped nose. That happens a lot with like the Brachy dogs. Their noses can get dried out and chapped.
And it can happen to all dogs in the winter, right?
Yeah, yeah.
Just because they're with you, it's when it's really, really windy.
And dry, yeah. So yeah. They sell, you know, basically chapstick for the noses.
Nose stick.
Nose stick.
Chap, nose, no, no, I don't know.
Yeah, I was trying to figure that out too. But chap is like the condition, it's not the body part, so it doesn't really work. And stick is just the delivery shape, so it doesn't work.
Yeah, so it really is just chapstick for dogs.
It's just chapstick for dog noses.
Man, we can't, muzzle stick, it doesn't make sense.
But yeah, so if you are, of course, worried about your dog's health, definitely take them to your veterinarian. And if your dog all of a sudden has a dry nose, then yes, it could very well be sick. But if your dog standard has a drier nose, then that could just be how they are.
Well, here's where I ask you something that I've always wondered that you probably don't know because you're not a vegetarian. You're not a veterinarian.
I'm not a vegetarian.
You're not a vet. But do you know why pets don't seem to get sick every year like, say, I do? I've never seen a dog
or a cat.
Because
they don't have to commute.
You think that's it? It's the living in close proximity to other people?
Yeah, dogs who go to dog parks and kennels and things, they get sick all the time.
Huh. But we took Bailey to the dog park and then we take Olive to the dog park all the time. She never gets sick.
She's chock full of vaccines.
No, that's true. I guess she gets a whole bunch of vaccines every year.
Yeah.
You're right. Oh, hey, look at that.
Yeah. But yeah, kennel cough spreads through dog parks.
So wait, I thought she just got the rabies vaccine every year. She gets more than that? What does she get?
No, she gets a distemper and she gets a and she gets Bordetella because she's around other dogs.
You need that every year? I saw some of those were like 3 year and whatnot.
That's the rabies shot.
Oh, rabies is 3 and the others are every year.
Yeah.
Because it's like cough and flu and stuff.
Basically, yeah. So I think partially with my job, I'm very careful to wash my hands before interacting with her again. And in between each walk, obviously, I wash my hands.
Yeah.
I wash my hands a lot, not just for me, but for the dogs as well. Mm-hmm. I don't want to like pick up something at the beginning of my day and by the end of my day have, you know, accidentally infected, you know, half the town's worth of dogs.
Yeah, you'd be like typhoid Mary, distemper Mary.
Dogfoid.
Giardia Mary.
You're really into Giardia.
It's the poop. It's because it's poop. Yeah. It's the poop is funny.
Yep.
Kennel cough Mary sounds sad.
Yeah, that's true.
Not like typhoid Mary was fun or like entertaining or it was funny. That it was terrible.
All coughings.
But I was gonna say, just as when you are a human who isn't a dog walker and you wash your hands regularly and pretty sure. much all the time, you know, multiple times in a day, you're not just doing it for yourself, but for every person you meet throughout your day.
Right. Yeah. Part of being in society.
Yeah, you're doing it for all of us. We're doing it for all of us.
Yep.
So yeah, so you think that might be why Olive also does not get sick is because you are making you're being proactive about washing your hands a lot and, you know, keeping an eye on your doggy charges.
Yeah.
And kitty charges.
Yeah. But I try to be aware of it.
Oh, well, what are other symptoms that, you know, dog owners just should be on the lookout for other than coughing, sneezing, and, you know, having a dry nose?
In terms of what?
You know, just like keeping an eye on their dog. Like, I always think Olive is very warm, but she's a dog, so she is very warm.
Yeah, but I mean, it's relative, you know. If she's was warm for herself,
mm-hmm.
that's one thing. But just general, you know, sickness symptoms. I mean, you have to be careful with animals because they won't show the signs as outwardly.
Because they want to cover it up because they'll think that you'll get rid of them.
Well, not get rid of them, but they'll get eaten by a coyote or
yeah.
like...
Also, though, I think if you're a dog living with a pack of dogs and you start looking sick, they're like, oh, we got to get away from Larry.
Yeah.
Yeah. Tonight, let's all just wake up early and move on while Larry's asleep and still hacking up his lung there.
Aww.
Sorry, Larry. And, you know, mental stuff, too. Malaise.
Mm-hmm.
When Bailey was sick with her hyperthyroidism.
Yep.
That was something you noticed over years and years of her just acting kind of differently. And eventually asking about it.
Right. Well, that was, you know, weight gain as well and other things. Yeah.
But that's the thing. Sometimes it's hard to tell this stuff apart from just aging.
Right. Which is why you should make sure that you take your dog in for a physical regularly.
Yeah. Yeah, definitely.
So that way, at the very least, you have the baseline. So that way, when something does go wrong, you have something to compare it to. You don't mm-hmm. want to just take your dog to the vet only when they're sick.
Yeah. And then they go, what are they usually like? And you go,
Yeah, you want the vet to also know what your dog is like healthy.
Yeah, and be at least somewhat familiar with your dog.
Right.
Yeah.
In its normal state and personality, yeah. Mm-hmm. Just so that way that there's something to compare it to.
Agreed. Right, I think that about covers it. Is there anything else we want to add? While we're not giving medical advice. Well, while we're giving not medical advice. And then, of course, you know, you got to be careful about saying the word sick around a dog. Because then it'll just bite the person nearest you.
Right.
This comes to us through email. It's a little long, so... sorry, Richard, I'm just going to cut it down a little bit. This comes to us from Richard. And it says, my father recently passed away and left me his cat. And I don't want an elderly cat. But I also don't want to give it away because it's had a really nice life and it would suck to end it in a shelter or with someone who doesn't even know. So what do I do? Do I find a friend?
Well, first off, we're very, very sorry for your loss.
Yeah, I'm sorry. That sucks, man.
But so you definitely want to rehome the cat. One thing that you might want to do if the cat was originally adopted is... see about reaching out to that rescue organization again. A lot of them have in the adoption contracts that you sign that if the animal ever gets surrendered, it has to get surrendered back to them.
Oh, interesting.
So that way they can keep track of their animals.
Mm-hmm. And rehome it in a way that they would prefer.
Right, exactly.
So actually, maybe returning into the shelter isn't such a bad thing after all.
Well, the specific shelter.
Like, that's what I mean. Like, not a shelter, but right. like finding... So finding a professional who knows what they're doing to take care of it might not be a bad idea.
Yeah, so I would reach out to see if you have any cat-specific rescue organizations in your community.
And that paperwork is probably in his, you know, his affairs. Like, we have our, I have a file with our adoption papers for both of our dogs. Well, our adoption papers for Olive and our other papers for Bailey.
Yeah.
You know, so those are probably somewhere.
So I would check that out first. And if not, you can, you know, see if maybe somebody else, you know, close in the family would want the cat. If you want to make sure that the cat stays with somebody that it knows, reach out to specific people that you know like the cat or the cat likes.
I guess if he had siblings who were amenable to having the cat, then this problem would be solved already, right?
Well, Well, not necessarily. But, you know, another thing to keep in mind is that, you know, there might be a reason why your father wanted you to have this cat. And if the cat is elderly and maybe not much time, if you are able to take in the cat, if it's not a financial or housing issue, you know, maybe just taking the cat. Especially, you know, did your father leave money to provide for the cat?
Well, he does say he has like a one-bedroom apartment, so it's kind of tight for a cat.
Oh, yeah. But, you know, you could still have a cat in a smaller space.
I guess. It gets catty quickly. I understand the difference between having like a two-bedroom place with a maybe a bigger living room, being like, all right, fine, the cat's in here is fine. Mm-hmm. And having like a one-bedroom there, the cat's always in your bedroom, and you're like, oh, well, this is now the cat's room.
Yeah, yeah.
Because that's a lot of people's apartments who I know.
Right, but it can be done.
And it can be nice. You know, you might really strike up a friendship with this cat. It's true.
Having something that close to your father and part of him and his daily life might be very nice to have around.
Yeah. You gotta let yourself be open to stuff, man.
Yeah.
So what's our pet exercise for today?
For this episode's Beyond Sit, I wanted to talk about a thing that Olive has been doing that kind of perfectly illustrates all of the language sort of training aspect that we've been talking about in the show. So I would say about a month ago, we moved the location of Olive's treats to a different part of the kitchen.
We used to keep them in two jars, like one for big treats and one for small ones. Mm-hmm. On the counter, and right. now they're like over the fridge.
Yeah, they're just a different part of the counter.
We're using that counter for something else.
Right. But Olive, even though she has now learned that the treat comes from somewhere else, when Olive does something like we come in from a walk, or, you know, another dog leaves, or something that she knows...
She does a trick.
Something that she knows that she's getting a treat for afterwards, she runs to the spot in the kitchen and sits there and looks up at the counter.
Where her treats used to be.
Right. So what we always interpreted as her being like, hey, look at those treats over there. I sure would like to get one. Has in fact, given that the treats have now moved and she is aware of the treats having moved.
Yeah, she sees us getting them from there all the time. So right. It's not like she thinks that the treats are still where she's standing next to when she asks for
right,
treats.
Right, but she's still doing the same action. She's still going, sitting, and most importantly, turning her head and looking at that same part of the counter.
That's weird.
Right?
Is it because she can't see over the counter because she's at
no, I don't
3
think,
feet? She's only 2 feet off
the
ground?
I don't think that has anything to do with it. It's no? That, as we've said before, dogs know exactly, like, you're capturing, you know, the moment in time when you give the treat or when you mark the behavior and the reward.
So
right?
She knows, I stand here, I turn my head like this to the left and up a bit.
Yep.
I get treat. Doesn't matter that the treats aren't there anymore. In fact, at that point, they're behind her.
Yeah.
Does not care.
No. You've witnessed this behavior
yeah, yeah.
as well, right?
Yeah. With my not-so-analytical mind, I did not give it much thought.
Right.
I didn't even notice. I just noticed she was standing in her treat spot.
Yeah.
What I realize is her treat spot, despite the fact that the treats are not there anymore, they are now somewhere else.
So
and have been for a bit.
Yeah. So it's now been, about a month. And the behavior on her part is still exactly the same.
Well, we're still rewarding her for it.
Right. But she has not, you know, when she saw that the treats moved and that it's so it's now taking an extra second or two to get the treats to her because, you know, they're not right there on the counter anymore. She is not moving to the other location.
No, she's sitting there waiting in the exact same spot where she knows.
Yeah. Spots.
And without meaning to, we've also taught her that that's what she's supposed to do, because
right.
we give her the treat when she does it.
Right.
Huh.
It's really about that one half second in time.
Yeah, be careful of the rituals and things you set up, man. Yeah. Particularly when it comes to, treats, but also, I've noticed stuff like this that I'm still trying to parse around, key getting.
Sure.
Leaving the house with or without keys. Bag getting. Shoe tying.
Mm-hmm.
Stuff like that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, well, I tell people who have anxious, separation anxiety, anxious dogs all the time to do two things, basically. One, do a different type of routine every time that they leave. So that way, you know, do your shoes first one time and then grab your keys first the other time. Mm-hmm. So that way, every time you go near your shoes, your dog doesn't start ramping themselves up. And you also don't make any sort of big deal out of leaving.
Right. You don't go like, all right, I'll be right back. Yeah. You're just like, you're just ninja.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Smoke bomb.
Yeah. I mean, I even say, you know, don't even say goodbye to the dog. If you have a dog that's anxious about you leaving, it's actually counterproductive to say goodbye to the dog.
Yeah, because you're just getting them worked up.
Yeah.
Yeah. We give Olive a treat before we leave, which seems to be working because she gets so excited about the treat that
distracts her for a little bit. So she was a little nervous at first when we first got her. So when we would leave her with a treat. And this is other ways in which, you know, your training can backfire on you. So now she has not been nervous about us leaving in 5 years now, I would say.
Yeah. Depressed. But not nervous.
Yeah, you know, but she's, you know, knows we're coming back. She doesn't get upset that way.
Yeah.
But she actually gets excited when we leave because she knows a treat is coming.
Mm-hmm.
Right. To the point where if I'm in a rush and I forget, I will see that she has looked like, you know.
Yeah, she'll have gone through the house looking for the treat.
She will go around. She's like, oh, well, you must have hit it. And then, you know, things are. So it's now more for the state of the couch that I make sure that there's a treat so that way she does not go.
All her toys are gone through.
Right. You know.
Yeah. Also, I've noticed that she will, for the same reason, I'll look for something in my bag and she's like, bag.
Yeah.
Treat.
Yeah.
All right. So, yeah. The rituals you set up, man.
Yeah.
Be careful. Just keep an eye on things. You can, if you're smart about it, you can, you know, use it to your advantage.
Yeah, no, that's the whole idea, is that you can definitely use it to your advantage. But also, even when you're not aware that you're setting a precedent, you're still setting a precedent.
Right.
So that's really the tip today, is, you know, it really is a half second in their mind that you're capturing.
Mm-hmm.
And you can really be very creative and crafty with the precedent that you set up in terms of what your dog can expect from you and what you can expect from your dog.
And then finally, you know, here I am searching for news for dogs 2 weeks ago, and I find that the Missoulian of Missouli, Montana has stolen your idea for how to keep your pets calm during the 4th of July fireworks.
I don't think that's exactly what happened.
It seems like it to me. Some of them were like exactly the same things.
Right, the same tips.
And then I do a little more digging and I find that the Mercury News in California did the same thing.
Well,
and so did Lizzie O'Leary of Marketplace. I've been listening to her for 4 years. Lizzie, how could you do this to me?
I don't think that's what happened.
I mean, it only got worse from there. I mean, as I looked, I saw ABC affiliate WNEP16 of Pennsylvania, Greensboro News and Record of Greensboro, WSBT22 of South Bend, Indiana, the Mercury of Manhattan, Kansas.
Oh, my goodness.
Yeah.
It's like three different places all in one place.
Yeah. ClickOrlando.com.
I'd rather not.
I don't know what that means. Mental Floss, and the one that hurts the most, The Late Show with Stephen Colbert.
Yeah, I don't think what you think happened.
I don't know what that means.
I don't think they...
They're all on the list! So once again, if you would like to send us your pet questions, you can do so at pettheoriespodcast@gmail.com.
You can tweet at us at pettheories. You can like us on Facebook. You can Skype at us.
And you can be our friends on Facebook. We have lots of friends, I guess.
Yep, we're now on Facebook, so we have to make up for lost time, so like us all over there.
Yeah.
And that's it for this week. We will talk to you next week.
As always, Pet Theories was produced by Ivor Mehta and Ephraim Oshinsky, and engineered by me, with music by The Music Boxes, which is not a real band, it's just a name I made up for the music I write for the show, and is a presentation of Ear Kitty Kitty Productions. Have a great week, everybody.
Bye.